1994, they closed all the cinema, and actually they closed the department of the cinema in the government. But still, I watched cinema first time in Sudan in 1995 or 1996. Still, some cinemas were working, screening blockbusters. So I remember seeing that light coming from the projector to the wall, and people going crazy about what the lead actor or the protagonist is doing. And I was like, oh my God, this magic. This is exactly what I want.
Hello and welcome to the CineDB podcast series about African film professionals, hosted by three film curators and critics, one Anglophone, one Francophone, and one Lusophone. This 18-episode podcast series features directors, producers, educators, curators, and critics who share their experiences and reflections around their work. I'm your host, Katarina Hedren, film curator and critic, and in this episode I'm talking to Sudanese producer, director, and screenwriter Amjad Abalala. In this episode, Amjad talks about keeping a film industry alive in times of great upheaval, about collaboration, and knowing when compromise is possible and when it's not. Amjad Abalala is a prolific Sudanese film director, producer, and screenwriter. His first feature film, the multi-award-winning You Will Die at 20, premiered at the 2019 Venice Days, where it won the Lion of the Future Award. It has since screened and won awards at numerous film festivals, including Toronto International Film Festival, before its commercial release in Egypt, Tunisia, France, and the US, among other countries. Thank you for joining us for this conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Amjad Abalala, I'm so happy to have you here today. Thank you for joining our podcast.
Thank you, Katarina, for inviting me, and that's really awesome. I'm looking forward for our discussion.
Me too. Let's start with your journey in film.
I think my journey in film started when my mom, when I was 10, she was working in a very huge library, public library in UAE. And I was just with her there reading novels that I don't understand, but I can imagine it. I think the journey with imagining those words on the paper became people started there. And after that, I became really obsessed with novels, with writing, with music, with different music that I don't understand, like French and Italian. And I think cinema, it's supposed to be include everything. I was drawing, I was like playing music, I was doing different things. It led me at the end, step by step, to the cinema through the theater. I think I started like acting in theater, and then I found myself in love with big names directors. I discovered them when I was 16, like Andrei Tarkovsky, the Russian, and to Angelopoulos, the Greek, and the most important for me is the Egyptian, Yusuf Shaheen. When he won Palm of the Palms at Cannes Film Festival in 1997, I think that's the time when I felt like, oh my God, I want to be there. I want to be like Shaheen. So yeah, from that time, I started being involved in the art scene through the theater as an actor and different things, like writer and director. And then 2001, I made my first short film when I was 19. I made the first one there. And then in university, I started doing different films with a group that I created there. And yeah, so short films till I made my feature.
Nice. Did you study film or drama, or how did that first film come about?
Yes, I studied actually media studies.
Okay.
Bachelor of Mass Communication and Media Directing. But there, we wanted to do cinema, and my dream was to travel to France and study cinema there in La Famille. And I was so young. I was 17 when I entered the university, so my parents really were not really approving me traveling alone to France from UAE. So I tried to make whatever I want inside whatever I had.
Yeah.
So since I went to the cinema at the you know, that university, UAE University School, I took the camera and I never get it back. You know?
Yeah.
And I created this group of people who love cinema, and we did in 4 years like 12 short films. I was doing, like, you know, as a producer, most of all of them, and some films as a director, some films as a scriptwriter. And we won awards, actually, around the world, as in, you know, short films and students. So, yeah, I think I started this way. And then I made my professional short films after I finished school. And that led me somehow to do my feature film.
And I'm interested also in, because you talk about the influences that were, for reasons that make sense, that weren't Sudanese, but your career as a filmmaker, it's Sudanese rooted. So tell me how that, I mean, even if you are Sudanese, obviously, but the connection with your home country, so to say.
Sure. Because, you know, I born and raised in UAE, Dubai.
Yeah.
And UAE, it's like 4 hours from Sudan. I mean, inside US, you can travel 4 hours between a city and a city.
Yeah.
So it's okay. I mean, it wasn't that far. And we used to go every year to Sudan. But from 1991 till 1996, I stayed in Sudan. So part of my childhood and my teenagehood, when I discovered cinema, when I discovered people, when I discovered to tell stories about things I see. And I needed that because, you know, living in Dubai, it's very privileged and very easy. And you know, but being there in Sudan, coming from Dubai and do the suffering, do the, you know, this kind of living, I think I needed that. That's why when I did my first feature film, I back to the same city, Madani, we stayed there. And then we did, like, you know, the shoot around the villages that around Madani, where my father's family came from.
Okay.
So I remember those images. I remember it in my memory. And somehow I wanted to back to that memory and in my first feature film. And that's exactly what I did.
And I want to talk more about the current state of Sudanese filmmaking, but one interesting thing to observe there is that your awakened interest is coinciding when cinemas were closed in Sudan, when they closed down in 1989, right?
Yeah, 1989,
yeah.
The new regime came,
yeah.
And the Islamic regime. They started to say, obviously, they are not into art. And art is haram or something like that. Something welcome. 1994, they closed all the cinema. And actually, they closed the department of the cinema in the government.
Yeah.
So it's not our time there. I was just 11 or 12 when they did that, you know. But we just wake up and raised in a country without cinema. And I think we just want that. But still, I watched cinema first time in Sudan in 1995 or 1996. Still, some cinemas were working, screening in blockbusters films, you know. So, and like summer cinemas. So, I remember seeing that light coming from the projector to the wall, and people going crazy about what the lead actor or the protagonist is doing. And I was like, oh my God, this magic. This is exactly what I want.
Yeah. So, and then you made your hugely successful film, a beautiful film, You'll Die at 20. And then you've shifted a bit or put the emphasis on another side. You're going from directing to more and more produce other people's films, fellow Sudanese filmmakers. Can you talk about that choice?
I would love to talk about that because when people tell me you are shifting, I was like, I don't remember ever that I did cinema without producing, even when I was 19.
Yeah.
Because that time, I had no idea what is producing is and the difference of directing. What I understand, doing film, like doing everything on it. You are not waiting for someone to bring you money or to talk to the actors in behalf of you. So whatever I did in my life, it was producing, but I didn't know that time it's producing. So honestly, I didn't shift because Even You Will Die at 20, I had 6 co-producers on the song. From around the world, from France, from Germany, from Norway. They are awesome, but for some political reason, they couldn't be there 2 years before the film or even one day before shooting. Two of the producers, they saw Sudan first time few days before the shoot. So definitely I was producing You Will Die at 20 inside Sudan. And it was very hard because you are producing a film inside a country without an industry. So you are preparing everything from scratch. Even the government, they can't say no or yes for the film because they don't have a system. Even for being against the film. They don't have the system to be against a film. You know? So it was like, I don't believe like I shifted to producing.
No.
For example, this film that I'm shooting now after 2 months as a producer, Goodbye Julia, the first pitching that me and the director, Mokro Lufani, did, it was in May 2019, during I was doing the color grading of You Will Die at 20 in France. I finished the music and I traveled to Portuguese with him to do the pitching of this film that I'm producing during I was finishing You Will Die at 20 before the screening, before the mixing even. So that's telling you like how I was doing this parallel.
I understand.
When I was directing.
Actually. Yeah.
But actually, why also I'm doing that? Because cinema always, this new kind of cinema, need producers who understand the world, understand the co-production, understand the map of this. Unfortunately, because the cinema just like started in Sudan, right now we have some nice producers, but not a lot. Yeah, so I had to do that. I had to do that because something I like to produce, but also the industry needs producers and directors parallel.
And I read somewhere, which I thought was an important reflection by you also, the importance of taking the responsibility to make sure there's continuity, to make sure that people work to...
Exactly. And like that's why now this year, we have different films, like we have short Sudanese film that we finished. It will be very soon in Cairo Film Festival, premiering. And we have Goodbye Julia, we were going to shoot end of October. Now we are in pre-production these days when we are talking. So, I'm very excited about this film. It's very important. And the director is very talented and very good scriptwriter and director. So, I'm looking forward to the shoot. We are shooting in a very difficult days again, as we did even had to do the revolution. We are doing this during a military camp. So, it seems like our destiny to always shoot films with difficulties in this country, Sudan. But I believe like pushing different films to the light, helping good directors and good stories to come out with our, the little experience that we had as a production company in Sudan, Station Films, me and my partner, Mohamed Al-Omda, we are really trying to do that as we can.
And that is interesting then, because now if we talk about more the state of Sudanese filmmaking and the climate in which you work, so you talk about your You Will Die at 20. I think you started shooting on the day of the beginning of the revolution, right? And you also mentioned, so you worked under those conditions, and then you mentioned that even if there was a government who said no to cinema, mainly they still didn't have the apparatus to reinforce it. And now you actually understood that you don't have to limit yourself to the political and governmental situation when you talk about the state of Sudanese filmmaking. But now you have another state, which you have mentioned before, which I think is quite an interesting reflection, where there's no government, no rules, which there's an advantage there.
No government, even to ask them, should we do that or not? There is no government. There is no prime minister. We are doing it also in a very tricky days But I don't know. I think we became like, you know, like the squad team, you know, like the Avengers.
Yes.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Ourselves like the Avengers doing films in this country. So let's just go and take the risk, you know.
Yeah. And in general, then, what would you say? What stands out for you in terms of the state and climate of Sudanese filmmaking today? Like, what are your...
I'm very happy seeing many projects coming out, people start believing in cinema. I mean, a few years ago when we talked to someone, you need to focus in cinema, you are talented. It was like, what I will gain from that? It's very hard. There is no industry. There is no cinema. So what happened in 2019, not just with my film, I think, even before my film in Berlinale 2019, two Sudanese documentary feature films were there, and one of them, talking about trees, got two awards, the Audience Award and the Grand Award of the Panorama, and it was awesome, I mean. And then my film, and, you know, and after that, it happened something like in France in one day, like both my film, You Will Die at 20, and Talking About Trees for Cyprus Malbari, both were screening commercially on cinema. And that never happened. Those Sudanese films, by coincidence, screening commercially in French cinema. So that's awesome. Actually, during we are talking right now, I don't know when this will be, but anyway, in September, now the film is in cinema in Germany. After 3 years,
okay,
that never happened to African or Arab film. After launching the film 3 years after, still German cinema wanted to put the film in 30 cinema halls around Germany. So I was just in Berlin. I came last week from there launching the film.
That's beautiful. Congratulations. And what are the implications? Like, because, I mean, it's hugely important that there is, like, the acknowledgement that there is a cinema that is happening and that it's ongoing. And how does that reflect then locally in Sudan in filmmaking communities?
I'm talking now about generally Sudanese people. They are really proud for us having this award around the world and stuff, but still part of them upset because the film's actually never been created in Sudan, because still we manage to do films, but we can't manage to build cinemas. And all cinemas are still closed, not because of the government, because it's just like old, you know, and some are still cinemas. And the cinemas are available now, like one very commercial in a mall, ruling by people not really from Sudan, from different country. And the other one under the military, it's very governmental. And so we screened the film 7 months in Egypt, but not a day in Sudan. 2 months in US, in UK, in 4 months in Switzerland, and actually 2 months in France, and Dubai, and Tunisia. But not a day in Sudan, not even a premiere. Not because it's not allowed, it's just because we couldn't find good cinemas. With, you know, DCB and stuff. And then the COVID came. So just like, so people of Sudan, they don't understand all this complication. They just like upset because it's their fault and it's not there with them.
I understand.
I totally understand that, and I'm sad also. But I think this is our next target, to help the industry by having cinemas that our films could be screened on those cinemas. But this needs the help of the businessmen, and they need to understand the importance and the economic of the cinema.
And are there also, I understand that there are also like activist and cultural activist organizations. Do they also screen films?
Yeah, but I don't want to do that because that's exactly what happened in all the past few years. So now I'm refusing all the offers from people I love, and I always work with them in different things. Like, you know, Water Institute, but it's not the idea to back to Sudan again. With this film, just to screen it in a cultural organization like Gotha, the German Gotha, or Leopold, the French. And I'm in very good relation. We always work together in different things, but screening This film, even if I wait another few years, I want to screen it properly with a red carpet for Sudanese people to walk on it, you know, as they did in Egypt and Venice and whatever.
I hear you. And I mean, there are quite a few of you, Sudanese filmmakers and industry people. Do you work together? How is the sense of community? Like, do you want to talk about that in terms of interaction and collaboration?
We have this collaboration together, and that's why we are producing. Because when you fall in love with a short film for someone, you want to make his feature film.
Yeah.
And you see he has a great idea, but he has no lead or guide for how that could be happening with a co-production. And co-production, so far, is the only option for anyone from Sudan to do film. I don't see the community so big, but it's growing.
Yeah.
It's growing up. And different films, different production companies start to happen now, and I'm very happy with that. For example, now we are doing Goodbye Julia with a collaboration with another production company who are already based in Sudan. They have a rental house, they have a team, working always in NGOs videos or let's say also the advertisement ads and stuff and some short films. So they have the knowledge of how to make that inside the country.
Yeah.
And we have the knowledge how to make this film global and bring the money from around the globe. So I think this collaboration now, it's really working, and it's part of how the community work as you are.
That's good that you're mentioning that, because I also wanted to talk about international collaborations in general. I mean, you just said that it's a necessity for things to be done, to be made at all, but also how they influence in the filmmaking. Are there preferences? I'm thinking both about Pan-African, if there are such collaborations with other African countries.
You are talking about the co-production and terms that come with sometimes, right?
Yeah, that too, but also it's a give and take, right? You gain more than just the financial and logistic advantages, but you might also lose things in terms of compromises that had to be...
No, not me.
No? Oh, talk about that, please. Please talk about that.
I'm very lucky with the producer who worked with me in Wildaya 20. And that's why some of them still, I'm working with them here right now with Goodbye Julia. That's why I'm producing Goodbye Julia. So I became in the middle between the director and everyone else. No one will tell him, not even me, how to tell his story. This is his way. And sometimes when I felt that, I directly, like, I came in between. But to be honest, my co-producers never asked me for something that I don't want. Yes, there is a talk about the script, the flow, it's character-driven, then I do some scenes from another point of view or another perspective. European cinema, like, always, you know, the perspective to be the protagonist, or at least two protagonists, you know, but not suddenly to jump for the third one, you know. It's very technical. But what always people trying to say around Arab world, Middle East, and Africa, and maybe it's happening with another people, maybe when they have a film that politically had something to put. But believe me, we are not, at least I'm talking about me, no need. I rather stop cinema, stop taking money, anyone rather than someone tell me or my director what to do, because European people prefer to see that and that and that. European people, they are seeing films now from new country as a cinema, I mean, called Sudan. They supposed to be open to see whatever we deliver, not what they used to see from African cinema or Arab cinema. Because if that's the rule, you want to see just always the same, you can just re-seeing what you saw before. So for me, I don't compromise in that, and I don't have to compromise in that. Because now, for example, the money that can come from Saudi Arabia is way more than the money that you can raise from Europe. And that's happening to do the balance, actually, you know. But from both sides, I never saw anyone really putting this big influence on the story or the script in a bad way. Not at all.
And is that something you have, that position, because it's an important one and a courageous one, like, is that something you feel you gained, or was it always there?
From my experience, that's what happened, because I'm working with the same people. I mean, Ingrid, Mike, they are awesome. And now we have also Mark from France. And I mean, they are awesome, and no one does that. But still, they all are artists. So artist being in a film, his name is there. He wants to make sure artistically everything is going fine. So by default, we are partners. So we're sharing together, you know, the new drafts. We're sharing together the new suggestions for musicians or for DOP. And everyone we are saying, but no one will say, I don't like this DP. If you insist to bring him, I'm out. So be my guest, be out. Yeah, you and your money. You know?
But
the final decision is for the director.
I think this is an important position, and it's almost also hard to blame those who can't be as ferocious as you are, because life is tough. But I think it's also, if I can assume, it's also grounded in some kind of great confidence also in the capacity of authentic, so to say, stories that come from an authentic space, that they actually can resonate beyond.
Exactly. So sometimes when you put that authentic story, no one wants to add anything on it. No one wants to take anything from it. But maybe it will happen in the next film. But I will always can feel, is this coming from the artist? The co-producer is an artist as well, right? So I can feel if that's like a suggestion from an artist partner, or it's I'm a boss with money, you need to do that. So here it will be the difference, and here it will be the yes or no. And I'm sure it will be the no.
No, thank you for that. Just as a roundup, where to from here, your plans and reflections, what do you want to share about that?
Plans, I mean, some nice films as a producer we want to do. We have many projects on the table, and we like them all, actually. Looking forward to work with the Sudanese female directors. Now we have like two projects. I can't say the name yet. Everyone knows them. And also, we're still working also sometimes with different films, like not from Sudan. Like now we have a Yemeni film will be very soon premiered in a very big festival. And we are very glad about that, because we jumped on that film just to help them also by the same concept of getting the film global, because it deserves. It's a beautiful film called The Burden by Amr Jamal, Yemeni director from Aden. And I'm so excited about this film. We are co-producers, so it's produced by Yemen and Sudan.
Beautiful.
Yemen and Sudan and UAE, Saudi Arabia now. After we joined, we brought those sports also with that. And personally, preparing different kind of feature films, or like if each one has a different experience. So I'm very excited about the three or four of them. I will not do it together, but whatever, I'm opening it together with different producers. And whatever happened first, I'm ready to do it, because I love them all, you know. And also maybe I will do a TV series. I'm looking forward to that. And with the help with the CEA, my agency there in Los Angeles, I think we are preparing very promising project.
For Sudan or elsewhere? Or can't talk about it.
Connected. Like the feature films all connected or related or will be shot in Sudan. Depends. Or maybe the story of Sudanese, you know, roots. But the TV series depends. One, I have two. One, it's about Sudanese. It's like a very Sudanese story and very famous novel. And the other one, Egyptian writer. And I'm very excited about that one. Like Egyptian.
Great. I'm looking forward. I'm going to follow this space that is yours.
Always a big support for this Sudanese cinema, and looking forward to meet you again.
Yeah, me too. Thank you so much for this conversation.
Thank you.
And all the best.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks. Thank you for listening, and thanks to Amjad Abulala for an energizing conversation. I highly recommend our series in French, hosted by film critic and curator Gia Mambo, and in Portuguese, hosted by scholar and curator Janaína Oliveira. You can subscribe to the CineDB podcast series in any of the three languages on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Lucky are those who speak all three languages, because you will get the maximum out of this series. This episode was created by Akil Aesthetic, with executive production and curation done by myself, Katarina Hedren. Podcast production is done by Vasti Kalitz, with help from Andrew Burnett, who is also our editor. CineDB Africa is a project aimed at connecting African film professionals with one another and audiences. This series is funded by the GIZ, the German Agency for International Cooperation, and the Goethe Institute. Until next time, keep well and keep watching African film.